unfortunately for me, and now for you, I cannot shake the thought that one part of today's gospel reading could have been lifted from The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, or from one of those trashy talk shows like Jerry Springer. One housewife says to another, "Why don't you go and call your husband and come back?" The other replies, "I don't have a husband." To which the first snaps, "That's right. You've had five. And the one you're with now ain't even your husband." The second wife's jaw drops and her eyes narrow. And she spits out, "Oh, no, you didn't," and lunges at her, and they fight. You know, if you want a different kind of sermon, next time hire a theologian. Anyway, that's not what happens. At least not in John's gospel. What happens is that Jesus does the exact opposite of a real housewife. He never condemns the Samaritan woman. In fact, despite knowing she's had five husbands and is living in sin with another man, he fully engages her, asks for a drink of water, and treats her like a human being. Layers of acceptance are at work in this exchange, each more shocking than the last in the eyes of those who lived in Jesus' time. First, a man shouldn't be talking to a woman in public unless she's a member of his family. Second, a Jew shouldn't be talking to a Samaritan. They're religious enemies, even though they really are of the same faith. And it was forbidden for a Jew to even drink from a cup offered to him by a Samaritan. And third, she's apparently an outcast even among her own townspeople. She is at the well when no one else is there, maybe having to wait for outcast hour to get her water. And there's no way someone with five previous husbands would not be considered an untouchable in that town. But Jesus peels back those layers of condemnation to find the Samaritan woman at her core. And he engages her there in a theological discussion. Unheard of. Even the woman herself is incredulous. "How is it that you're even talking to me?" But here's the thing. This conversation that Jesus has with her is the longest discussion he has with anyone in all the Gospels. Jesus exchanges more words with this Samaritan woman in one sitting than he does with anyone else, Jew, Pharisee, disciple, or Roman. That tells us something. Namely, that this dialogue is very important for us to hear. And why is it so significant? Because in talking with this woman for such a considerable time, Jesus imparts to us that she deserves consideration. Although she is a woman and a Samaritan, and although she has had five husbands and now has a boyfriend, Jesus does not condemn her. Moreover, he treats her with respect and wants her to be his disciple. And if God wants to be with the marginalized, then surely God also wants to be with us. And with those whom we marginalize, and we are called to be with those people too. About a month ago, we had a string of homeless people who were leaving their stuff on or around a bench in the courtyard outside my office. It was mostly plastic garbage bags filled with things, but it was unsightly. A few of you commented on it with concern. After a few weeks of this, I got fed up. So I printed up a sign and taped a few copies of it to the bags that read, "You may not store anything on our church campus. Please remove these items immediately or they will be tossed. Thank you." With the last set of bags, I left the signs on them for 2 days, and then I tossed them in the dumpster. 5 days later, a woman, whom I'll call Sherry, knocked on my door the minute I arrived at the office. This is a woman who was an Army veteran who had become homeless 18 months ago. "Pastor, thank you for taking my bags in and storing them for me. I really appreciate it." "What bags?" I asked, though I knew full well. When I told her that I had dumped them, only after putting signs on them and leaving them there for 2 days longer, she got quite upset. "Pastor, there were some really nice things in there. Why did you throw them away?" And that's when I lost it. This is not your personal storage locker, Sherry. If those things were that important to you, why did you leave them here for a week where anyone could have taken them? You cannot leave anything anywhere on this campus or we will throw it away. She seemed taken aback at my anger and went and sat down on the bench, managing to add, "At least you could have looked through them and taken out some good things and sold them for the poor. Not everything was soaked through. Some things were still good." "I'm not opening trash bags left out for days to hunt for treasure. You need to take your stuff." She just waved her hand and mumbled, "Okay, okay." I went back into my office, shaking a little. Right then, I had a meeting with Laura, our music director, who it turns out had been sitting in the copier room and saw the whole exchange. I was embarrassed, probably felt a little defensive, but Laura didn't say much about it. Lying in bed that night, as so often happens, I realized I probably could have handled that better. I mean, who had all the power in that exchange? Yes, we can't have stuff strewn about our courtyard. But why couldn't I just have been a little more patient? A little more like Jesus in today's reading and met this woman where she was, engaged with her as human to human? I guess because it would have taken more effort than I was willing to give. Please understand, I don't tell you this story or any other personal stories to beat myself up in public or to elicit your sympathy. I tell you these stories to show that we're all only human, even your priest, and to suggest that sometimes you too might fall short of the example Jesus sets. And if I can admit my less than saintly behavior, maybe you can too, even if only to yourself. And maybe we can both then try to do better next time. The reason this exchange between Jesus and the Samaritan woman is the longest in the Gospels is that it provides a lesson that is so hard to truly learn and yet is so crucial. Every human being bears the image of God. That includes the homeless in our midst. That includes illegal immigrants. That includes 175 Iranian schoolgirls now dead. That includes American soldiers killed on bases in the Middle East. That includes Israelis. And while this might make you chuckle or roll your eyes, I mean it as hard as it is to admit. That includes Pete Hegseth, Pam Bondi, and other members of our current administration. And for those of you with a different political palette, that includes Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. And that includes ourselves. Every human being bears the image of God. It is a mystery, it is a challenge, and it is the central message in today's gospel reading. In his eulogy for the Reverend Jesse Jackson on Friday, former President Obama said this: "Jesse Jackson expressed the very essence of what our democracy should be, the belief that regardless of what we look like or how we worship, regardless of where our ancestors come from or how much money we've got, we're all part of the American family. And we're all obligated to answer the call and step forward and take responsibility for making wrongs right and for caring for our neighbors and bringing the reality of America a step closer to its glorious ideals. We are living in a time when it can be hard to hope. Each day we are told by those in high office to fear each other and to turn on each other, and that some Americans count more than others and that some don't even count at all. So it may be tempting to get discouraged, to give in to cynicism. It may be tempting even for good people to maybe just put your head down and wait for the storm to pass. But Jackson's life inspires us to take a harder path. His voice calls on each of us to be heralds of change, to be messengers of hope. Not because success is guaranteed, but because it gives our life purpose, because it aligns with what our faith tells us God demands, and because if we don't step up, no one else will. Sherry stopped coming to the courtyard for over a week, and I had been looking for her to apologize. When I finally found her, she was sitting on a stone bench way over here in our memorial garden. As I approached her from quite a ways away, back at the fountain, and you know it's all an open space, I was actually wearing shorts and a bright shirt that afternoon. As I approached her, she never really looked at me, but as I got closer, she got up from the bench, leaving her purse there, and slowly walked over to the side of the church to hide herself behind a bush. And part of me, you know, wanted to laugh because there was no way I could not have seen her. But mostly, I felt like an ass, like a dog. Sherry, I said, there's no need to hide. I've come to apologize. I'm sorry I lost my temper with you. I'm sorry your stuff is gone. I've talked with Joe Greiner, and next time we'll try to find the owner of things left in the courtyard before tossing them. It really is best not to leave anything here. But I'm sorry I lost my temper with you. Slowly, she tiptoed out from behind what was pretty much a leafless, see-through bush. But she wouldn't look at me. Sherry, please know that you're welcome here. Okay, thank you, Pastor, she said. But when I came back a minute later, she was gone. And I haven't seen her since. When Jesus comes to your well and asks you for a drink, what will you do? Maybe more to the point, whom will he look like? What if he is that very person or kind of person you most loathe in the world? How would it feel to give that person a drink of water from your well? Disgusting? Anathema? How can you even know that loathsome person is Jesus? Well, if you believe that every human being bears the image of God, then you know the answer to that question. Each of us has been apportioned a share of the living water that now gushes up within us. It is not to be wasted. It is for the quenching of thirst, our own and the world's.